Podcasting 2.0 for April 26, 2024, episode 177, ChatGPT. It's a Friday again. Hello, everybody. How you doing? Welcome to Podcasting 2.0. This is where we discuss everything that's really happening under the hood in podcasting. Podcasting 2.0. Everything that we got going on at podcastindex.org, podcastindex.social. Learn more at podcasting2.org. We are the only boardroom that has bleachers and beanbags. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who can move tags from items to channels and back again. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. Dave Jones.
Did you send in our payment?
Our payment?
Yeah, for the our IAB membership. Did you remember to do that?
We're compliant, bro. What do you mean? I don't. We don't need have to actually do that. We just say we're compliant. Isn't that what I learned?
I would prefer if I had to choose a tag, a badge to put on the site, I would prefer one that said IAB non-compliant.
No. Is that thing falling apart? I mean, if Megaphone is not a part of it, isn't that 30% of all podcast listening apps?
I guess.
I don't know. That does make any difference. It's about the log for the Megaphone, but they got a lot of business, don't they? Megaphone. They got Rogan.
They got Rogan.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
They got a lot of business.
So maybe...
No. Do they have Rogan?
I thought they had Rogan. Megaphone feeds for Rogan.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because maybe that's initially why. Rogan.
Yeah, you know, they got Rogan feeds now. Oh, no, we got to make sure these numbers live up to expectations.
Which requires not having the IAB.
probably correct. Yeah.
I'm double checking this because I think initially Rogan was not on Megaphone, and everybody was like, what?
No, I think he changed over. No, I think I remember an article or something that he turned over.
I think you're right.
Went to, And Todd over there, Blueberry, is selling Host Red ads now. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, sure.
Can't wait for us to do some.
Oh, are we going to do Host Red?
Oh, of course. Sweet. Yeah, why not? We should totally do Host Red
ads. IAB. We're going to ask for the IAB. Are your download numbers too low?
Yeah.
Join the IAB. We can jack them up by 10%.
So I was looking, speaking of Spotify, I'm looking at it. It all kind of clicked. You know, Spotify reported a, not net profit, but what is it? Net cash or something. It's some scammy words. But what they did is they bundled, you know, by from what I understand, when they added audiobooks, and now it makes a lot of sense. If you add audiobooks to your app, then all of a sudden you're a bundle app and you're not just a music app. And therefore you can pay 25% less royalties to artists.
Whoa, wait, what? This is all... I looked into the Spotify stuff, but this is all new to me. To explain this to me.
Okay, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, so the way the rules work, because audiobooks also have also have royalties and stuff, I guess. Let me see, where was this? Where was this?
They should.
There was a lot. Here we go. From Finanzas, Yahoo Finanzas. Oh, that's cool.
Is this Spanish Yahoo?
Yahoo, yes. Spotify's music audiobook bundle means a lower royalty rate for U.S. songwriters, but company promises record payouts. Okay, well, that's always great.
Sure. We don't have to, but we're going to because we love you.
Spotify's premium plans combining music and audiobooks will mean a lower mechanical royalty rate for songwriters on those plans, the company has confirmed. That's interesting.
Where's this coming from? Like what legality is this related to?
Mechanical rights. So
in every country or just the US or
mechanical rights are a worldwide thing. I mean, this is okay. This is a publishing, there's all, let me see if I can find any official continuar leyendo la historia. Okay.
That's what I thought.
Click here to read the rest of the story.
Okay.
Um, Okay. With the introduction of standalone audiobooks offering, Spotify is now able to pay lower music licensing rates for the music and audiobook bundle introduced in the U.S. in November 2023. The 2022 settlement agreement between the National Music Publishers Association and streaming services included a carve-out for bundles such as Amazon Prime, Apple Music, plus Apple News, which the new audiobook offering falls under. Such plans lower the mechanical licensing rates the company pays in the U.S. Spotify's lower royalty rates are retroactive to March 1st, 2024.
Whoa.
So, you know,
that's a big deal.
When you do like your, you know, you're not reporting profit, but net cash or something like that, you can also be projecting into the future. You know, so there's certain expenses that you don't have to mention. You know, it's kind of like the inflation rate, core inflation, which doesn't include food, housing, and gas.
What about super core?
Super core takes out, I mean, living. You don't live. It's just some stuff. It's just Amazon deliveries.
yeah. It's nothing but Amazon deliveries and DoorDash.
Yeah. So that means that, you know, they probably, and also with an increase in subscription price, that's probably how they're, you know, how they jacked up those numbers. I mean, it's a public company. I know how this works. It's creative accounting.
Sure.
I mean, you know how this works. Who am I talking to?
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Well, I mean, this is a great move by them. Because if everybody else is doing it, so that means that they added audiobooks not because they give a crap about audiobooks.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
They sell a single audiobook.
Now, NMPA President CEO David Israelite had strong words for the move when contacted for comment by Variety. It appears Spotify has returned to it, attacking the very songwriters who make its business possible. Spotify's attempt to radically reduce songwriting payments by classifying their music service as an audiobook bundle is a cynical and potentially unlawful move that ends our period of relative peace. We're on the warpath. We will not stand for their perversion.
You need some like rocket noises or something to go.
Well, if you want that, hold on a second.
Yeah, this peace will not stand. It's a invalid peace is what it is.
We need to have, where's my rocket ships? I got rockets all kinds. Oh, here we go. We need a cruise missile.
This will not stand.
Nat Pops. You need more Nat Pops.
Yeah, Nat Pops. Somebody like this. Yes. We will not stand for this, Spotify. We will get you. We'll put our attack-ems. There's an attack-em. Yes. Nat Pops. Yeah.
It's much more interesting with that. Otherwise, it's kind of boring.
But that totally made sense to me. Totally makes sense. People love our audiobooks. We really don't know if that's true.
Well, their audiobook. This makes so much more sense because their audiobook deal is awful. Like you get,
it's
not even in the same league with like Audible, like as far as like cost goes, it's not even close. So it doesn't, they don't care if they sell a single audiobook. This is all about getting, this is similar to their previous thing where they had, where they clearly were using the increase in monthly active users from Anchor to get their MAU rate up on a month over month basis so they could retain their lower royalty deal to the music companies. And this is going to happen. They've coiled the spring now so that it's ready, because now what they're going to do is, I don't know if you saw the little bit of news where they said they're going to start basically joining Spotify for podcaster accounts.
I saw it, but I didn't really focus on it. What does that mean?
Yeah, so right now they're two separate accounts. So what you have is a historic Anchor account. So when you sign up for Spotify for podcasters, you're signing up. It's different than your Spotify account.
Okay.
What they're going to do is they're going to migrate these users over to using a Spotify account. So now when you sign up for Spotify for podcasters, you're going to be using, you have to use a Spotify account. So that immediately, they have like roughly six million podcasts on Spotify for podcasters.
Uh-huh.
So as they migrate these user accounts over to be Spotify accounts, they're going to get, they're going to, I mean, these, this is going to make that MAU number go up.
Oh, and, I see what you're saying.
And going forward, if you want to have a spot, an essentially what is an anchor account, you got to sign up for Spotify. So it's like, it's a win-win, you know, to keep that MAU truck rolling.
I'm glad I don't run a public company anymore. It's so painful. It's painful.
The other thing I took out of the Spotify earnings, though, was that when they break it out, the premium users, meaning the people that pay for the service monthly, their share of revenue was $3.2 billion for the quarter. Ad-supported, basically the free users, the ad income from those, their share of revenue was $389 million. So it's more than 10x less.
Wow!
Revenue from ads than from people who just pay.
Number.
Yeah,
that's low.
It tells me like when you give somebody a chance to just flat out pay for something,
they do it.
You make more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ad route is just selling yourself short.
Well, I mean, not in all cases. Not in all cases. New York Times had a big. Expose on NPR.
I brought clips.
Oh, you did? Oh, well, let me read the what caught my eye. The title of the piece is Inside the Crisis at NPR. The Crisis. And speaking of bundles, adoption of NPR's podcast subscription bundle, NPR Plus, has also lagged behind competitor subscription businesses, according to internal documents obtained by the New York Times. Those crafty Times reporters. About 51,000 people subscribed to NPR Plus as of early March, and the product has generated $1.7 million in revenue since it was introduced in November 22.
Yikes.
That's unexpectedly low.
That's very low.
In late 2022, NPR began selling fewer sponsorships, part of an overall downturn in the ad market, which, I mean, is that not, can we confirm this now? Will anyone actually cop to it? So for the first time since the COVID-19 pandemic, Mr. Lansing, then the CEO, and his team planned for NPR's revenue to remain flat in 2023. He wasn't prepared for what happened next. When January arrived, the bottom fell out of the digital ad market.
It did.
He said in an interview, sponsorships fell $34 million compared with the previous year. And yet somehow the overall podcast advertising market is now $18 billion. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's doing great.
And I know that people are like, screw these guys. You guys hate advertising. You're no good. No, that's not true. It's just called Schadenfreude.
Yes, this is enjoyable.
And then he goes on to say.
But I love people.
No, of course. That's 10% of our revenue, and you can't go back and get it. It's like an airplane that takes off with half the seats sold. Once it's gone, it's gone. That's an odd comment.
That's a weird metaphor. What does that even mean?
Well, if it's a Boeing,
just wait for the door to pop off. And then
more people will jump in.
Yeah, it's coming back to the ground. Just wait on it.
But part of what really got me is, which just showed me how tone deaf these people are. Because, there was a lot of DEI involved in changing around stuff. And, we really have to diversify our content.
Right.
So it came as a disappointment to some people on NPR's board last fall when they were presented with new internal data showing their efforts had not moved the needle much with Black and Hispanic podcast listeners. Listeners, and wait until you hear what they did. Black listeners made up roughly 11% of, and how come they don't say African American? That's so incorrect. Black listeners made up roughly 11% of NPR's audience in the second quarter of 2023, unchanged from the same period in 2020. So 3 years, no change. According to the data further showed that the share of Hispanic listeners went up only 2 percentage points since 2020 to account for 16% of the total audience. One 2020 survey from Pew Research found that of the people who named NPR as their main source for political and election news, 75% were white, more than any other outlet except Fox News.
Fox News, yes.
Oh, no. You're number two on the white supremacist list.
Yes.
But then here's what they did. And this is what's just insulting. I mean, these people, I think, are actually racist. They don't even know it. NPR's efforts to diversify itself and its audience didn't always live up to the expectations of the people who worked there. During a round of layoffs last year, NPR cut Louder Than a Riot, a hip-hop podcast that examines black and queer issues. So here's the meeting, Dave. We're a bunch of white dudes sitting around. We need to up our black listenership. Yeah, let's do some hip-hop. Throw in some queers. It'll work. No problem.
Yeah.
The black Americans don't even want to be seen as black Americans. It's Americans. They want news like everybody else, but no. You're going to pander with a hip-hop podcast. It's sad. It's really sad.
I agree with John Spurlock. The comments on that article were what was...
I haven't actually looked at the comments.
I'm like him. I never read comments on anything, but the comments on that article were very good. I mean, like to just read through. I mean, the leadership of NPR should read those comments because people are telling them exactly what's up. I mean, I brought some clips.
Oh, okay. I mean, do you know what? Do you remember any of the comments? I can't actually see it because it's paywall now suddenly for me.
Somebody called it a grievance-based network.
Wow.
And I think that's really what, that's probably the best summation of the comments was that people just don't like listening to a grievance-based network. Everything is just negative and victimization and grievance based.
Yeah.
And people got tired of that thing.
We're seeing with No Agenda that we're backing off a little bit on the amount of mainstream media clips we play because it's exactly that. And people get tired of it. Like, I don't want to hear you guys tell me what's going on. I don't want to hear the clips. It makes me tired.
It's fatiguing. Yeah, it's fatiguing. I didn't realize, but just a side comment, I didn't realize that NPR's staff was SAG-AFTRA.
Oh, they'd have to be.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. They're actors.
It was AFTRA and SAG and AFTRA merged. So they were, I've always been AFTRA and I've always been SAG or SAG eligible because, and we're actually both eligible because I don't pay dues anymore because I don't have any union gigs. Mm-hmm. But then they merged. And so technically it would just be one payment.
AFTRA was the sort of media side of the...
American Federation of Television and Radio Artists.
Okay, I got you. All right, makes sense.
Broadcast, basically.
Okay. But I guess my thing is, so Catherine Marr got a bunch of... I mean, she's taking the heat.
Yeah, this is the new CEO of NPR who... I mean, we looked at her from an intelligence angle... She has quite an interesting background.
For sure.
But, and certainly she came from Signal, the Signal Foundation, before that Wikimedia, which I think everyone knows is very managed. Managed. Then not
HSBC
by people
Bank
anymore.
For some the International Monetary Fund. I mean, she's worked everywhere.
She's worked, World Economic Forum. That's just a drinking club, but still, right. So she's clearly a globalist. But then a lot of these tweets of hers resurface, and it seems like it's just more of the grievance stuff that the listeners, or at least the readers of the New York Times, don't want to hear on their NPR stations.
Well, I know people like this.
Like Catherine or commenters?
No, like Catherine. Mm-hmm. I know people who look at the world like this and talk like this. I did what all good researchers should do. I use the Podcast Index API people search and search for Catherine Marr.
Oh, right on. Excellent.
Yeah. To find all of the podcast episodes that she's been interviewed in and listening.
I like it. Excellent.
And I'm telling you, it was awful. When I say I know people like this, I'm not trying to be mean.
Are there people like this in Alabama? I mean,
oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. But you mean people that think they're smarter than you?
Yes, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
But people like this are insufferable. They just will not stop talking about in arcane terms about just the most minuscule, it's just all minutia all the time. And it's clouds of connected terminology that you're trying to it's like a fog you're trying to get through. You listen to 20 minutes of it and you're like, I don't even know what she just said. And
you gotta send me some links to this stuff. Sounds like no agenda material.
I brought these clips are unnecessarily long just so that you can understand what she's like.
Okay.
So she speaks like ChatGPT. So let's just call her CatGPT.
Okay. very flowery.
Yes. Yes. Catherine is CatGPT. So when if you went into a laboratory and said, like, it's 2024, build me the perfect NPR CEO.
Yeah.
They would build you this lady. She talks about governance constantly, institutional governance. They're not looking for truth. They're looking for consensus on what is not disinformation. Like, there is so... It's just mind-bogglingly boring.
I'm getting the electricity ready to create her in the lab.
clip one is she starts.
Where's this from? What podcast is this from?
This is from the podcast Possible. Mm. I think that's the name. Let me make sure that. It's good. Okay, it's from Possible. Yeah. Possible. Yes, that's about it's Reid Hoffman's podcast.
Oh, another fine specimen. He's a big donor. I think he's a big NPR donor. He should be a big NPR donor.
I feel like, so this was from January 24th of this year. I feel like this was sort of a tryout for the NPR CEO gig.
Mm.
Some of the questions seemed oriented in that direction.
Oh, that would make sense. You have to go through, okay, you got to do Reid's. Isn't he on the board? Isn't he on a board? I have a feeling that he's isn't Reid Hoffman, Reid Hoffman, NPR. So he's the Salesforce guy, right?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Let me see. Yeah, I have a feeling
Is he on NPR's board?
He would be the kind of guy that you would have to go by, you know, it's like, oh, you got to go talk with Reid before we can get you in. You know, if you get Reid's endorsement, then you're good to go.
Let's see, LinkedIn, Reid Hoffman. Yeah, I can't tell from here, but it would not. Either. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. But this sounds like I think this was prior to her being at NPR, just prior. And this just feels such like a job interview, or at least just a sort of some FaceTime, you know, with somebody that was already probably had taken the job. Because in a couple points in the interview, she starts referencing to, she's using the term Wikimedia in like past tense.
Right.
And that kind of thing. So,
right.
But she's in this clip one, she's talking about institutional, there's two clips here, institutional trust. It's hard to see. It's almost unclippable, but it was like, it's like institutional trust and, how did it comes from, the black breakdown in institutional trust comes from diversification.
I think the internet has been catastrophic for trust, but perhaps not for all of the reasons we might think. When I say catastrophic, I think that what has happened is not that the internet has destroyed trust. It is that the internet has surfaced fissures within systems and allowed them to grow and grow publicly at an exponential rate. And so when, for example, we think about trust in institutions, which is something that I'm very interested in, and it comes to sort of institutional governance, institutions fit for purpose. And I mean institutions in the abstract and in the literal sense. So the institution of universal suffrage is an institution, although it doesn't have like a brand name. The issues that we've seen there is that many of these institutions were built around a sort of homogenous population that they were serving. They were not terribly responsive, both in terms of accountability to that population. And then when we started to see increasingly heterogeneous populations due to immigration, diversification, civil rights movement, et cetera, we started to see how those institutions were not actually sort of fit for purpose. What the internet has done is it has exposed those fissures in ways that are related to both. We now interface with all sorts of technologies, platforms, and services that are hyper responsive to our needs and have created an anticipation of a much more frictionless, much more productive set of processes, services, outcomes, SLA, functional human SLAs.
Human SLAs? Really? Hey.
Yeah, I thought you would like human SLAs.
Human SLAs. Service level agreements. Seriously?
So imagine 45 minutes of that. I mean,
what did she actually say? What do you think she actually said?
I know exactly what she said because I listened to it, no lie, like 8 times. I think I know exactly what she said. What she's saying here is that NPR, okay, so she's talking about institutions.
That's NPR. NPR is an
NPR,
institution.
Yeah. That it qualifies under her definition. So she's saying that NPR was built to serve a specific group of people. That group of people being upper class white people. And that's the true problem with it as an institution. That's how it's broken. Okay, it didn't just break.
I would still say just upper class. I don't know if NPR was specifically servicing white people. I mean, you know, Cory Booker,
75% of their audience is white, is according to the stats. But this is her. You know, this is her frame of reference here.
Yes, I got you.
And she's saying the internet, like social media, YouTube, podcasting, etc., just exposed that already existing problem. So to her, the core issue at NPR is that it was only serving a core audience of rich white people. And the internet just exposed what was that existing problem. And I mean, this, if you look at John Lansing, their previous CEO, this is very much on point with what he was trying to do with the company when he was there. He was very much on the same mindset, evidently. He was trying to change that. But the problem is, if you change NPR's target audience, what you have is no longer NPR.
Well, you know,
you have something different.
What this says to me is this is proof you can't monetize the network. Because people who like NPR programming, that's what your podcast app does for you. I put it together. I got my own podcast network of shows that I like. That's what changed.
I think they looked at their audience and said, it's a bunch of rich white people.
Oh, that's how they looked at it for sure. Yeah.
Yes. And then they said, so what we need to do is change ourselves and we'll change the audience. But the problem is when you change, is when you do that, what you've created now is no longer NPR. You have something different. That's very much in line with what the commenters on the New York Times article were saying. They were saying that over and over, they're saying, I feel alienated. Mm. What is this thing that I'm listening to? It didn't used to, these stories are like, they're talking different than they did 20 years ago. It's boring now. It's blah, blah, blah. And so like changing your audience is fine if what you want at the end of the day is a completely different audience. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily. But you have to stop and ask if that different audience wants you.
Yes. Yes. Well, also,
and they might not. I mean, you already have a committed audience. I'm just talking purely talking about NPR here. I'm just trying to be blunt. If you're NPR, you know you have a committed audience of rich white people that every year are going to buy $100 million worth of tote bags. But is this new audience that you're changing to, are they going to do the same thing? The answer, we see the answer. The answer is no. That's how you lose $30 million.
Yeah.
It's because, you know.
Well, so radio, then there's a whole bunch of things going on here. I mean, what I ultimately see is we've seen a very, very slow collapse of broadcast across the board. The newspapers are done. It's done. I mean, there's always going to be a couple that make it, obviously, that hang on to that. You know, we still have AM radio stations that are hanging on, you know, AM radio networks, but basically it's gone. In fact, the main market that radio stations are supposed to serve is their local home market. That's gone. That by itself is gone. That's what the internet did. Is I can listen to a market of interest. You know, it doesn't have to be a geographical market. There's other offers if you want to know what's going on in New York City besides the morning radio shows, which coincidentally in general are basically one guy like Elvis Duran at Z100. He has 20 stations across the country. So he's talking to all different kinds of markets at the same time, not just New York. So this collapse, I think, is accelerating. And that's what you're seeing here. Also, the cost, the overhead, that's why they put so much, they brought their radio values to podcasting. They put up, $1,000 Neumann microphones and said, this will work fine. We can have, 15 people on Radio Labs or more even. It's like, no. No, at a certain point, that's not the economics anymore. It's the same thing with streaming video. And streaming video is going to have this exact same problem. You know, Disney is a great example. The Marvel Cinematic Universe. Well, we're catering to kids who identify with white superheroes. We got to bring in some gay lesbians, black lesbians. And they're now the superheroes. And then, so you ultimately start alienating both sides, pandering and what is this?
Yeah, see, that's what I think happened to NPR here. They decided they wanted to diversify their audience. And in doing so, what they ended up with is having no increase in Black and Hispanic listeners and a decrease in white listeners.
Yeah.
So they basically went in reverse. The new audience they wanted. And again, there's nothing wrong with what they wanted. But that new audience they were wanting never materialized.
No.
It never got there.
It wasn't there. The audience was never there for what they were making.
Yeah, it turns out Black and Hispanic people just don't care about NPR. And that's fine.
Yeah. I mean,
like, you can't make them care.
No.
And, those populations, by and large, evidently have, media they already listen to, and it suits them just fine.
Yeah.
So NPR just basically just foot-gunned itself. And they didn't start by laying off and chopping a bunch of radio people. They killed the podcast group first.
Yeah, they shot the horse that actually had a chance.
Yeah, your old audience feels alienated, and now the new audience never showed up, and so that's like a recipe for bad times. But a clip two is like, but I think clip two is how a glimpse of, if you think that she's going to fix things at NPR, the clip two will give you a glimpse of that future.
We've also seen that we now have the ability to reckon in real time with examples of where those gaps actually are, which make the failures of those institutions even more evident to a greater number of people. That, to me, is sort of the primary issue relative to trust in this day and age, is not really around, oh my goodness, my algorithm is serving me information that I can't trust. It is actually around a set of expectations about how institutions should function in our lives, and where those institutions are falling down is responsive institutions that are consistent and accountable in their purpose and effective in their service delivery. Absolutely. Then there are questions of like, well, why is the media not trusted? And, what does sort of social media have to do with all of that? And I think that those are useful questions, as are the questions around what is AI going to do to our, like, the construction of false information? But I think that they are secondary questions to this primary one around what has the internet shown to us about the institutions that have historically governed our nations, our lives, and where are they not fit for purpose? And I think that this is actually a really important and essential question. If for those of us like myself who believe very foundationally that institutions should be responsive to all people, but that institutions are perhaps the most important part of stable, democratic, rights-respecting representative governance.
She's not doing it. She's not going to change a single thing. Because to her, she said things like trust and media are secondary issues that we can talk about those later. So what she came into this gig with the idea of, which basically with the exact same frame of reference that they already had.
Yeah.
That has been shown to be a complete failure. So plan A didn't work. And plan B is basically a bunch of question marks. I don't know what to do.
Well, they're also, NPR is severely hampered. I mean, the history of NPR with the local station strategy is just hampering. That's the whole problem. Yeah. They have a network of stations. And those stations buy programming. Some of them make programming, sell it back to the network. That idea is just over. I was talking to, I don't know if I talked about this. My buddy went up to see him in Dallas for his 60th. His brother came, and I actually knew his brother, his older brother, before I knew Vic. And Steve was a junior engineer at the time, but he later became the senior engineer of big broadcast companies. I think it was Emmis first, and then it was in Clear Channel. And he knows a lot. And the television stations, the local television stations, they're done. A local ABC affiliate, it's done. It's all over. They're going to close. They'll be buying, they may do one program to try and do some local news, but the networks, they don't want to pay for anything anymore. It's like, no, it's all closing. All of that's the network node model of broadcast, radio, and television is gone.
Is it because it's so like our, for instance, like our local ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox affiliates, you're saying those things are television, those things are going to just be gone.
Yeah. They really have no reason to be broadcasting anymore. I mean, yeah, they're still going to try terrestrial digital broadcasting, but it's really over. The model has broken because you can insert ads at a local level. You don't need a local sales. Right. All of that stuff is gone. And it's way too expensive.
And is that a drag financially on the mothership?
Big time. Yeah. And the motherships, they've all expanded into all these additional businesses. ABC, is of course owned by Disney, but they're trying to divest of ESPN. And this is sometimes consolidation doesn't work out too good. If the world changes, and this is what I love so much about podcasting. This is what I love. The audience gets to determine what their menu is, what they like listening to, how fast they like listening to it. I'll add that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, that's my personal beef, but ultimately, the technology is there. You can do whatever you want. And as we've seen, the audience also determines if I want to hear ads or not. They'll just load an ad blocker. And that's coming, we basically have that in podcasting. It's called the skip 30 second button. That's a form of an ad blocker. Everyone has it. And everyone raises the hand. Yeah, I skip the ads. So something is fundamentally broken. And also because of the supply and demand, the days of, the NPR, because I saw the numbers, the NPR Morning Edition hosts, they each make, $400,000. Yeah, that's over.
Oh, they're over. Well paid.
Yeah, though, yes. That's over. You're just going to have to get by with less. Make an outstanding product and you'll be okay. And subsequently, the idea of I have to be number one, because if you're not number one or have the most downloads or the biggest audience, those days are gone too. I mean, there's always going to be your top dog in something that everyone's crazy about. And there will always be infrastructure for that, but the people who can actually get in there, 1% will be 0.01%. And the most, the most interesting stuff won't even be there anymore.
I didn't realize that NPR's, I didn't realize that they've only been around since 1971.
Yeah. That was when they were older than that. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting was created.
Yeah, that was surprising that they're that young.
And also, they really started to rely a lot more on underwriting.
Yeah.
Of course, it was pure advertising in the podcast market. So they lost that value for because when you hear the NPR pitch, you know, look, you and I listen to one NPR show religiously on the media.
On the media, yeah.
And I've actually sent them money for it because I felt so disgusting. I had to send some money. But now I know that it's not going to On the Media, is going to NPR, and that makes me feel icky because I really like that. I declined the tote bag. I really... If Pivot, if they ask me for money, I'd send them money. Stuff that I listen to, I will support that. And they kind of let that go. But their pitch is now, well, if everyone sent $1, we wouldn't even having this conversation. Yeah, that's not going to work. And you're also devaluing. Devaluing your product. Well, is it really just worth $1? What is it worth to you? Does it brighten your day? I mean, these are very easy pitches, but instead they went for Squarespace and all the other stuff with a code Bongino. They went that route, and then you live and die by the ad market, and if you can't see that CPMs are always a race to the bottom, downloads race to the bottom, particularly when you have an ever expanding universe.
The original 1970s NPR logo is pretty killer.
And now you also see, even though James won't write about it, but, Meghan Markle, big announcement with a lemonade. But there's no money. That's why she's not doing it. They said, we can probably get you $50,000 on the ads, maybe $100,000, maybe. But that's advertising-based. She has no relationship with the audience.
Well, I mean, it's just like the Obama stuff. Obama's
same thing. Exactly.
And Brené Brown and all this. There's no organic connection there.
And let's be really honest about it. He's my friend. But Joe did not get $250 million. Every report says could be worth up to.
Yeah, right.
Based upon ad sales.
Performance, yeah.
Yeah, performance. And so I don't know if Spotify sells, if they cut it, because, I think originally they had a deal with YouTube, and he let Spotify deal with YouTube and add money there. And so I'm not sure. I don't know anything about the deal. But for sure, I know when you're jacking into Joe Rogan's podcast every 15 minutes with an ad, just boom, right in the middle of it, We're scraping the bottom of what we're doing here.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. I'm not a listener to his show unless there's somebody a guest I specifically want to hear. But you were telling me about the new, like the ads now that they're popping them in all the time.
Every 15 minutes.
It didn't used to be that way. It used to just be a bunch of pre-rolls and then there was no ads during the show.
Yeah, no. Everyone of course skipped those. But those were the early days, it's like, and he had 10 minutes of ads. Yeah. Everybody knew 20 clicks. Boom, 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 boom. I'm there. And these, and they're host read ads. They're Joe doing the host read ads. Yeah. And honestly, he loves every product and uses every single product, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. They're all in his garage.
And I think also he lost some influence to a degree.
Oh, really? From what? That's interesting.
By not being on open podcasts. I think it hurt him.
Not being on YouTube.
I mean, he honestly doesn't care. He really doesn't care. Joe does not care. He doesn't do the business. I don't talk to him about, he doesn't talk to anybody about business. If I said, hey, you need to be on Value for Value, he'd be like, talk to my manager. I don't care. He did that show for years without even knowing that you could make money on it. He just wants to have fun. That's Joe. That's why he's successful in what he does.
Right. Because it's a focus on the content and not on the other side of things.
He has other people to deal with that. And he's one of those people that can still be top dog in what he's doing. and and that infrastructure will support him. But I doubt that that's the kind of money that's being made. I really, really doubt that. You know, so you're telling me that he has a quarter of all podcast advertising revenue? No,
I can't see that. I can't see that that's the case. I mean, but who knows? Maybe.
But all all those deals and Spotify gave up. They just gave up. They saw it wasn't working. They saved face and they gave up. And here we are. Here we are, right back where we started.
Yeah, they added audiobooks, fired a bunch of people, and raised prices. And now here we are.
And Joe has a much higher output right now. He's doing a show almost every single day. I know why, because he knows now he has real competition. And I think he enjoys it. I think he enjoys the competitive nature of getting, you know, these interesting guests first, having them on, and then, there's a huge benefit to in this case. I think that's the only place where video makes sense to me is it's highly clippable. People will watch 3 minutes of video on X and then say, yeah, no, I heard that episode.
Eric PP said he's back on YouTube. Is that?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought he had an exclusive video deal with Spotify.
No.
Wow. Yeah, that makes that Spotify deal look just pretty much kind of weak.
Oh, well, we don't even know what the deal is.
Yeah, I mean, like I guess what I mean by that is it makes me question the reported details of that deal even more.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I'm just happy that Joe's on my podcast app, or that I can watch if I want to watch my YouTube, which I don't, but I'm happy. The only thing for YouTube, the only reason that I will look at that is to look at the million comments. Like, the comments are always interesting because a lot of people comment on his episodes. That's why I'll sometimes, go take a look at the episode on YouTube or just, switch over for a minute, but usually I'm just listening to it. But that's really what I love about Joe. I don't care if he makes $1 billion or $0, and I don't think he cares either. It's easy for him to say, but for myself, it's the same way. We do this podcast for no money. We do a lot of things just because we love it. Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we pay for the pay for the index. And break even on the index, this show has always just been like weekly. Let's talk about some podcast stuff.
Just Adam and Dave catching up.
Just the board meeting. Yeah.
It's catching up. Exactly. So on that note, let's move over to Activity Pub, because there's been a lot of posting, a lot of stuff going on. And the one thing that did catch my eye in general is Dave Weiner not being happy about the move towards Activity Pub in general for Federation.
Okay.
And I think Federation is the correct word, because we are in essence looking to federate the podcast apps. Is that a fair way to put it?
Federate, I guess federate in terms of the Fediverse or whatever.
Well, federate comments, federate ratings, federate reviews, follows, federate likes, federate, so everybody has there's a federation of, exactly what it's called, social interactivity around podcasts and their episodes.
Yeah that's fair. Mm-hmm. That's fair.
So does it work yet?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to work up to care what Dave Weiner said. What did he say?
He said, hold on a second. I should have had that.
I mean, if he's got a legitimate beef, well then, I mean, I'm willing to listen.
I think it's, it's like, it's not invented here, but it's, hold on a second. His site is loading very slow for some reason. Here it is. When did he post this? I think he posted on Monday. The idea of us all working together to federate is the right idea, but making Activity Pub the hurdle everyone has to jump over is, in my humble opinion, the wrong idea. I'm building on feeds, RSS, Atom, RDF. A lot of good stuff works on that basis, and it's a much shorter path to interop than Activity Pub. So I, to me, and I think he's looking more, not looking at podcasting, obviously, but he's looking more at how, you know, bridges that bridge, you know, feed A into system. I mean, I see ActivityPub kind of as an aggregator. You know, it's like I can follow or subscribe to certain feeds and it aggregates them. And then I can do something with that, which in turn I can turn around and other people can aggregate what I did with it.
This comment is too vague to really even know what to respond to. I mean, this, because I mean, RSS is for, okay, look, we made RSS work as a pub sub mechanism with Freedom Controller.
Mm-hmm.
I could post something on my microblog and it would show up on your newsfeed. You could hit reply, which would reply in your RSS feed, referencing that item in my feed. And then since I follow you, my newsfeed would pick up your reply out of your RSS yes. feed as a threaded reply to the thing that I originally posted.
That was actually a very cool thing you built there. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and we called that like a pull only social network. There was no push involved.
Right. The problem was everybody needed something hosted somewhere.
Right, which is still the problem with ActivityPub.
Yes, but the infrastructure has been built and people are using it. That's the difference. Like there's 8 people with a Freedom Controller and right. there's millions of people who have an account on an ActivityPub instance with some front end, be it Pleroma, Mastodon, etc.
Well, I mean, he's right in the sense that I don't know what he gets off into he's using the term interop and I'm not sure what he means, but I mean, he's right in the sense of simplicity when it comes to feeds, when it's just, okay, so an RSS, a podcast app is just polling RSS feeds to look for new content. Mm-hmm. That's about as simple as you're going to get. That's no different than typing in a website address and letting the page load.
You're right.
That is more simple than ActivityPub because you don't have ActivityPub now you've introduced, now not only do you have what you could call a feed, which might be the outbox, but you now have a sort of a verb layer on top where you're having to push actions back and forth.
Yes, the verb layer is the right description.
And so now you're having to push actions back and forth to servers that are listening to each other. So this is the difference between, you know, something like just polling an RSS feed versus web sub or pod ping where you're just basically listening for events.
It was interesting because it is a mind bender in a way. Because I was listening to Sam and James talk on last week's podcast, Pod News Weekly Review. And it was so obvious that James was not quite grokking the idea of how ActivityPub fits into this federation of apps. And he can only, at that moment, I haven't listened to the whole show this week. At that moment, I could tell like, you're almost there, but you're still thinking in terms of commenting on a post and stuff like that, whereas you've got to remove that whole layer from your vision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk about activity streams, that's nothing more than a user RSS feed. Okay, it's JSON, it's serialized, whatever you want to call it, but it's still, that's an RSS feed, let's just call it that for the moment, that I am creating as a user, and my content is actions. My content is things I'm doing, and it relates directly to a previous post, which is an episode or a show itself. And that is, in effect, aggregated and redistributed or made for following and redistribution by ActivityPub.
Right.
So it's kind of like you have an, you have a feed aggregator that can turn around and syndicate that out to everybody who's interested.
Yeah. Yeah. If I have an RSS feed, all I need is a, is I need just one file. If I have an ActivityPub relationship to the world, I need a server.
Yeah. Yes.
And that can, I need a server that can speak and listen both. And so, you know, the, what we're trying, you know, what we're looking towards is for with ActivityPub in the future is not at all easy.
No, 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 it's not.
No, it's, and Dave's right on that point. It's not at all.
It's a hurdle. It's definitely a hurdle. Definitely.
But we went from zero to pushing Bitcoin around in real time.
Yeah.
So that we can do hard stuff. You know, that's not, it's not, I'm not scared of that. I'm not scared of doing hard things. And the, you know, another issue with RSS, I don't mean issue in the term, in terms of it being bad. I mean, like another one of the considerations here with RSS from a historical point of view is that servers used to be very expensive.
Yeah,
it really was like it, to run a server really was a financial burden. So being able to and bandwidth was a financial, a big financial burden. So I mean, if you think about that, I mean, RSS made sense for that time period. It still does. I mean, I'm not slamming it. It still does. RSS made more sense than something like ActivityPub would have back then, where you're going to have to run a actual server that's doing a bunch of things. Nowadays, the dynamics around all of that has changed. The financial burden and the, I mean, and just the technical know-how required to run something as a small server is much more accessible.
Well, besides,
so I don't feel limited anymore. That's what I'm saying.
It took a decade or so for us to create an infrastructure for feed hosting, and so now there's thousands of places you can go to host your feed, and it's to the point where it's invisible. Nobody understands it. I heard some sports guy. Mm-hmm. And it was something about ads being placed in front of his podcast. And the way he saw it is, I have a hosting company, he says, and they upload it everywhere for me.
Okay.
And, you know, and if one of my episodes doesn't show up on Apple, they say, you forgot to upload to Apple. See, people mm-hmm. don't even know how it works anymore. And we're still like, we got it in our heads, right? Feed, aggregator. We can all connect those dots very, very simply. But people don't see that. They're like, yeah, I'm using this. And I guess you have a hosting company. They upload it everywhere. They just make sure that file is uploaded to every platform. That's what people think. Even podcasters don't realize anymore how it works.
Yeah, it's so transparent, like you said.
Yeah, but we built that infrastructure, so now instead of, let's set up little servers to host little mini freedom controllers so we can interact with things. Now there's an infrastructure and it runs an activity pub and it's called Mastodon, you know, just for all intents and purposes. But we don't care about the Mastodon part. We care about the plumbing, which is activity pub, which we can use beautifully to our advantage.
Right. And that's the part where it gets hard.
Of course.
You know, because you're now starting to speak a language back and forth to each other.
Yeah.
It's no longer just a get request. Now syntax is important. Now the wire level protocol is more complicated. I mean, these things are, Alex had a great point yesterday. So one of the changes I made to the namespace this week, if we're going to do some namespace stuff, is that, for a long time, the social interact tag has only been allowed, like by spec, has only been allowed in the item. So in the episode, yes, at the episode
yes,
level.
Yes.
And there's always, people have always wanted it to be in the channel itself too.
People being James Cridland.
No, there were others. I mean, he wanted it, but there were others. Like in the original discussions, that was one of the original discussion points was, you know, why should we limit this and that kind of thing. I think,
and I'm not against that. I think I disagree with the fundamental argument that shows that have smaller audience will have less people interacting. I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. The conversation is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's fine. Put it in the channel. I got no problem with that. Can I just make one more analogy?
Yeah, sure.
Almost everybody, including me, has a Google login, has a Google identity. And this Google thing does a lot of things for you. I typically use it if I'm signing up for something that I really just, I'm just trying something. I really don't, this, it's my burner account. And so I'll get a verification through my Gmail. Yeah. I do have PayPal linked to it. So I can do Google Pay, which sometimes is just super easy. So that universal login account is in fact what your Mastodon, I'm just using that as a global term, login will be for your podcast app.
Oh, yeah.
So that we can then do something that I doubt Apple will ever do. I doubt Spotify will ever do. Is we can be communicating all of these different interactions amongst each other, amongst an ever-expanding universe of apps. That, to me, is super exciting and blows away all competition. Because then the cool kids are over here. They're interacting. They're commenting, just like Rogan people go to YouTube to comment. Now, it's all about comments. But even discovery of, oh, look at how many people are following this podcast. Mm. That is a very, very, very compelling thing.
Yeah, and you could see that would build up, you would build up a community of people, of podcast listeners who are dedicated, like app level listeners. They always use a podcast app.
Yeah.
And they would be posting, you know, they would be doing actions back and forth, commenting, reviewing, rating, adding things to playlists.
Yeah.
These shared playlists.
Recommending your own pod roles. I mean, you can have all kinds of stuff that can really become a social graph. I said it, but it's really true. It's really true. You're making available a social graph that you can then, that will enrich your own life.
Mm. Yeah. And that would be its own sort of community, you know?
Yes.
Like the YouTube community or whatever, if that evolves around a specific host or a specific channel or whatever you want to call it. But then it just propagates.
Yes. Everywhere. Everybody can get a part of it. And then that can go out to websites and more businesses will sprout from that. I mean, I can see Daniel J. Lewis revamping his entire business if this is possible.
Well, this comes back to, you know, social interact in the channel. And, and now if you have some sort of tie back to the social interact, if you have some sort of tie back to ActivityPub in the channel, then you have a starting place for pushing actions back and forth about the podcast itself. Right,
like follow and that kind of stuff.
But yeah, not just follow. Yeah, but like you said, ratings and reviews. So this may be something, Daniel may be pulling this data out to pull into his service.
It's like someone sent me a note the other day. Are you familiar with this website linked to Good Pods? We really need more representation over there. And I'm like, you know, well, my people don't, you know, they don't go to good pods or whatever it's called, you know, and there's other, but you know, you have all these little places where people congregate and talk about, you know, their one or two podcasts or a group of podcasts. And we can bring that all together. Now, good pods should be a part of it. They should be federating with the apps through ActivityPub.
Yeah, because they got they're a comment destination. That's a place where those things happen and reviews and all that. I mean, it's funny. You think that if you have a protocol, that means that you can just, you think that once you have a protocol, you can just extend the protocol and you don't have to worry about like things like breakage and that sort of stuff. But it's not really that simple, because you still have chicken and egg things that happen with even within an existing protocol. Mm-hmm. So for instance, Mastodon, as we go down this road, if we have things, we're going to need new objects. You know, so now maybe a note object is not enough. We need something different. Like we, you know, just as a crazy example, we talked about a pod ping over ActivityPub. Mm-hmm. I'm not really thinking about that these days, but if we had that, let's just say, I'm just trying to grasp an example here. If we had that and you had a pod ping object within ActivityPub, well, the existing ActivityPub clients, they don't know about that. They have no idea what this thing is.
No, they wouldn't know what to do with it.
They wouldn't know what to do with it. So that you still have a chicken and egg thing. Now you have a shared protocol, so you can, that's made to be extendable, but it's really not that different than something like a namespace in an RSS feed. Support has to be built in.
Okay. So this is interesting.
That's the hump you have to get over.
Okay. This is good for me. Edifying. So the hurdles that we're seeing is, so let's take some simple things. What can we actually do with the existing ActivityPub protocol before we would have to create, you know, new verbs, namespaces, blobs, whatever it is? Can we do podcasts I follow?
You would.
So for instance, if you look at my profile in on podcastindex.social,
right?
And this is just a very basic thing, but you look at my profile and here you can see posts and replies, media, but then you can also see following, and I click on following, it shows who I'm following, and you can see followers, who's following me. Can we use the if I had to create a whole new ActivityPub account, you know, let's just forget all the complicated stuff. Could you at bare minimum be seeing which podcasts I follow if my app put into my ActivityPub account that I follow these accounts, which are all podcasts? Am I making sense?
Yes, you're making sense. So you would enumerate your, like, we would have to tag these actors, these podcast actors, as podcasts. Not sure exactly how the best way to do that right now. I'm trying to envision what the actor object looks like, but we would basically identify these actors as podcasts. Then someone would query your following list and then be able to see, okay, 75 of these 250 follows that you have are podcasts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, that's not a burden. I mean, that's doable.
And it comes down to whether
there's two levels you can do it at. You can just sort of like tag the actor in some way as a podcast, or you can define a podcast actor, which is a whole different sort of,
right. I got you.
A more involved thing. And that's the part where you have to jump over a log.
Yeah. And Harvat says, I actually have zero desire to show everyone what I follow. Sure. I mean, but that's not the trend. People love beefing up their profile, letting people know. I mean, just, I mean, that's a fact of social interaction. People like that.
Some people like it. Some people don't, you know.
Yeah, I know some people don't, but a lot of people do. I mean, it's just like we now have the podcasting 2.0 logo emoji, which everybody can add to their, which I like, you know. It's like, hey, I'm virtue signaling that I'm a member of this group. I mean, this is things that are cool. Mm. You know, so these are all, you know, this is a podcasting 2.0 podcast. I mean, all these different things. I understand what you're saying now, and that's an important part that I hadn't really considered, that yeah, it'll work if you're all on the same instance that understands these objects or actors or whatever you call them. But that would be something that would have to, that everyone has to implement that just like a namespace in order for that to work.
Yeah.
We've done it before. Yeah, exactly. We've done one namespace. I'm sure we could do another one.
Oh, we've done two. We've done two namespaces. We did SOPML and podcast namespace. So we know how to namespace stuff. If anybody's good from starting from absolute scratch, it's probably us. But I think we can, and ActivityPub is not going to be the solution to every problem, you know, and nothing really is. There is no protocol that is the solution for every problem. You pick and choose. That's why we still use XML for RSS feeds.
Yeah.
Because it's fine. It works. It's fine. Nobody's changing this. And so when it comes to social interaction of a certain extensible type, ActivityPub is the right tool for that job.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. I mean, am I barking up the wrong tree here, or is social? First, we have to agree, is social interaction desired? And I say yes. I say social interaction between podcast apps is something that will turn it into a very, very powerful entity.
I think so too. Yeah.
Is ActivityPub the right infrastructure based upon its limitations versus its availability to many people?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
In my opinion, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So when it comes to social interaction between apps, ActivityPub to me is the correct answer.
Why?
When it comes, because it's got this. This is similar to why to choose one crypto over the other or whatever. It's sort of a constellation of different factors you have to take into account. It's not super complex. It's got an ease of understanding to it. It's got market share already. It's already got momentum, like lots of it. It's off and running. Mm-hmm. So it's got support within most languages, like it's got libraries for most languages that will support the basics.
Okay.
There's example code out there. There's that kind of thing. And then you're already seeing it being done. Apps are already federating in using this protocol.
Okay.
So it's got sort of like its pedigree at this point makes sense. When you versus something like a Nostr where you're starting, you know, you're trying to build
from
something
scratch.
From nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, ignoring all the downsides of the protocol itself. I mean, it's just purely trying to get something off the ground from absolutely nothing. And there's no network effect, you know.
I'm going to ask you, this is how we do it, Dave. With that in mind, the energy, so taking your scale, right? Is the energy, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is the energy and the amount of, I think energy, not velocity, but the amount of veracity that is, there's velocity and veracity. So yes. The ActivityPub has velocity. Nostr has veracity. And in in effect, if you want to add something to the Nostr protocol, we will find much more, a much easier path, I believe, than going to Gorgonzolas, whatever his name is, Gorgon, and saying, hey,
Demi Gorgon, yes.
Gorgon, we need this. Hey, these crypto bros over here with free speech, we want to have this added to Mastodon. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. I understand all the issues. And I, Alex Gates, I love you. Don't get mad just yet. I'm just asking the question. Are we very, very sure ActivityPub is the right way to go, taking the velocity versus veracity into account? Because as I've always said, Nostr is a solution looking for a problem.
Well, yeah, no, I think ActivityPub is the correct solution because Nostr has the same exact problem.
With a smaller group to convince who may be more enthusiastic to make it work.
Nah, I don't know that I would go that far.
Okay.
I mean, because Nostr has the same issue. It has, look how many NIPs there are. There's like 7 bazillion of these things. You look at your typical Nostr relay and it supports maybe 40.
It always comes down to the instance or the relay or whatever. Yeah, it always comes
right
down
there's
to
hundreds
that.
Of yeah, proposals yeah, that just yeah, never yeah. get anything done.
Right. But the way I see it is it's entirely possible that just as True Fans will become a full native ActivityPub client and will service its users with an ActivityPub instance, a login that doesn't act at all like a Mastodon server, but just does the ActivityPub federation. Will that mean that Podcast Guru basically needs to do the same for their users?
Say that again. I'm not sure I follow.
Instead of me bringing my existing ActivityPub account, which is typically linked to a Mastodon,
right?
Is it easier to bootstrap this by the app developers having their own, which is a whole nother burden, a whole nother can of worms, having their own ActivityPub running either in client or as a server to service their customers, their app users for the social interaction with other apps?
I think that's the only way this really gets off the ground.
This is a big thing to understand.
Because I agree with Airhead in the chat because he says his comment is Mastodon is a really poor example of ActivityPub. And I think he's right in one sense. I mean, it's a good example of it if your aim is to show what it can do as a proof of concept for a use case. Like, I'm having trouble describing this. There's a reason why whenever anybody comes up with a social protocol, the first thing they build, just like Nostr did, the first thing they build is a social network.
Right, which is kind of death.
Yeah, it's an easy sort of way to. It's the same reason all example code apps that like how to build an app 101 always starts with like an RSS reader. Mm-hmm. It's just this easy hello world type.
Yeah,
here's my protocol. I'm going to show it off.
Right.
But he's right in the sense that it leaves you with a poor understanding of the full capabilities of what can be created with this thing. It sort of leaves you wanting because what you end up with is thinking you're in a box, you're stuck in a box. You're thinking, okay, this is a social media protocol. But it's not really. It's it's capable of much, much more. Mm-hmm. I'm
least interested in the social media aspect as most of these things pop up. That's why I'm always saying, let's do something really simple, like a star. If we can all get if I can hit 5 stars on one podcast and everybody else can see that in their app. Champagne all around.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, or are those things like play?
Yeah. Well,
that's a podcast native thing that ActivityPub could do that you can't do through RSS, to speak to Dave Weiner's point.
Right. It just seems like, I don't know what I'd do with it. I don't care if someone's, well, maybe I do. I'm more interested in aggregate. Like, what's a rating? What's a review? What's a star rating? What is followed a lot? This is the stuff that people always think they can get from the index, which we don't have. Like, how many people are subscribed to this podcast? That stuff that is interesting. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, I think we need to pick one thing that hopefully is not comments that we all say, okay, we can implement this. And I agree with who said that in the Todd, I guess, Geek News, that, you know, podcast guru has Podchaser. Log in here to Podchaser. And I'm never going to do that.
No, I won't either.
I'm never going to do it. Now, and by the same token, if it said log into your Mastodon, a lot of people probably won't do that. But if it says you're logged into Podcast Guru, which I am, but I have some kind of, I know I have some kind of login credentials for Podcast Guru, because I can synchronize it somewhere, or Podverse or whatever, you know, that's, I'm feeling better about that. And then what that does on the back end, if that's connecting to an activity pub, that's great. It's fine. Hey, I can see how many people follow this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, this is that the login with Podchaser thing is a way to give Acast first party data about, about, you know, listener metrics.
Got it.
Let's just be honest. I mean, that's what that is. But, you know, Nathan said, I'd love to hear your thoughts about the open API for podcast sync data. I've got that in my notes here, and I've got a bunch of stuff to say about that. I'm not sure we have, I feel like it's going to be a long conversation, so I'm not sure we have time to go over it. And I want to talk about it. I think I want to talk about it next week.
Okay.
Because I may actually try to get some code up and running on that this week.
And what is this? I'm not familiar with this. There's an open API standard for podcast synchronization?
Yeah, it's the Open Podcast Sync API.
Never heard of it.
Well, I mean, it's very nascent. It's new. But I don't know. I want to get a little bit more off the ground on that. I have tons of thoughts on it, and I think it's a very interesting idea, and it could relate to this also.
Okay.
To ActivityPub. I actually want to do some coding on it. I would not mind coming up with a reference server for this.
And what is this? So that means your subscriptions can sync between apps?
Yes. Subscriptions and other types of
other
data
stuff. Uh-huh.
Related to your catalog and what you're doing with it.
So I think that's, I feel like we went one step forward, two steps back, but it's okay because that happens in these iterative processes. But I just I just have a high level overview, and that's if we can connect these apps together, which I'll just call federating, but interop, call it whatever you want. I think that's a big win for podcasting, for the independent apps that can do it. Because everyone else would be left out in the dust. It won't be as interesting.
Right.
You know, then rate or review. Well, what are you going to say? Go rate or review it on Spotify? No, do that on these apps, because then there's these other 20 apps that get the same information.
Yeah, just do it right in the app. Yeah.
You know, click on your five, you know, basically a pod roll for app users.
Yeah.
Click on your five favorite, you know, when I heart it on a podcast guru, that should be an activity that shows up somewhere. And I had this many people heart this podcast because they like it. And then you could even drill down. What else is this guy like? You know, I might like that other stuff. There's your discovery. That's, you know, people have this idea that YouTube's going to give them discovery, but no. But this is discovery native to what we're doing. And if we can do that distributed through ActivityPub or the Open Podcast Sync API. It doesn't really matter to me what's under the hood, but what a giant leap for mankind that would be.
Agreed. Yes. I mean, the, yeah, and all this, the Open Podcast Sync API, I can see that being, this is what I want to explore is a sort of, I need to get a mental model of how this could federate, because I think it can. And the other thing is we want to, I promise we'll talk about this on the next show. I just, we've talked about so much already. I don't think I can handle, the mental bandwidth of that.
Yeah.
But, because of my notes are like, I've got like six levels deep in my outline here about the podcast sync API. Mm-hmm. But, the other thing we got to remember is people don't always want, many people, myself included, don't want their, I don't want a single identity online.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? I mean,
sure.
You don't want it. I don't have it either. Like,
yeah, I don't have it either.
Yeah. I want to segregate my identities out into different use cases. Like I have my podcast index, .social, activity pub identity. If I go and have an identity within the sort of federated podcast app world, mm-hmm. I don't want that. I'm not going to use my podcast index.social ID.
Got it.
I'm going to have something different mm-hmm. because I like the compartmentalization of these different things because they serve me, and identities online are meant to serve you, and they serve my needs in different ways. That's the thing that always creeps me out about the sort of digital identity stuff, the DID mm-hmm. stuff mm-hmm. is there's always behind it this sort of notion that it's only going to be like universal single sign-in.
Yeah.
Where you are you everywhere and yeah, you don't have to have like
don't worry, the government will give you that. Don't worry, that's coming.
I'm waiting for my mail.
Exciting. And I'm looking at this Open Podcast API. It looks like a lot of people started it, were interested. AntennaPod, Funk Whale, Cast, PodFriend, GPodder. Mm. It looks super interesting.
The first reaction to it is, just use OPML. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, no, this is actually legit. Mm. This is better.
Can I talk about a different interop project that is taking place?
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm.
So I've had some ongoing conversations with Cody from the Sidestream Music Podcast. Now he's a radio guy he still has a morning show here in Texas, and he is now putting. I think it's actually there's a call. Of course, it's happening right after today's board meeting, which I can't attend their call.
Now, is this the guy that was on the Wave Lake show?
That's Cody was interviewed by the Wave Lake guys. Yeah.
Okay.
And so Cody really loves, he's a live radio guy, and he's been, I think he's now episode 25 of the Sidestream Music Podcast, and he knows a lot of the artists, and you know, he's a real driver. I mean, like many of the guys who have shows in the V4V music space. Now he has a good connection, friendly connection with the CEO and founder of Wire Ready. And Wire Ready is basically a radio playout system. So very similar to M Airless, which I use. Mm-hmm. So Wire Ready it has your carts, and then you can, you know, your soundboard, you can queue up songs, and then you can play them. And so for both live and recorded shows, he is now connect. So they're going to have a call with, I think, Dovidas, since Dovidas, I think Cody is already hosted with RSSBlue.com. And mm-hmm. what they're trying to do is create a version of Wire Ready, which, you know, typically is licensed to radio stations for not an insignificant amount. This guy wants to play value for value, so that you will be able to download this Wire Ready program. You can then create your podcast with it. It would hook into, initially, I guess, rssblue.com. I don't know exactly what they're going to come up with. But the idea is you fire this up, you say, I'm looking for a song. It hits the podcast index API, just like the SplitKit does or any of those other things. So you can search, you can queue up your songs, you play them, and then on the fly, it tracks everything and then outputs your chapter and your value time split JSON feeds for upload to your host. So we have and it will also activate, you know, a lit stream, whatever. So we'll have an all-in-one bundle, and it'll do value for value. So, you know, he's going to want some value. He's going to want to be in the split. So anybody can, in essence, download this. There'll be a special podcast version, and then you can go live. You can record it for upload later, and it will do all allow you to search the music and do all create all the very much the way the SplitKit does it, but then all integrated into one application that is a professional app for this. Yeah, isn't that cool?
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very excited about that. It's like,
that's rad.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're talking about me. That's pretty cool. I mean, I need to get in there and fix some of the API around music. There's some,
yeah, of course.
There's some issues with,
but the thing is, Dovidas is in the middle, so he already knows how to access all that stuff. He knows the problems, so Dovidas will contact you. And I hope that he gets. I think Barry should be brought into this. You know, the podcast 2.0 native hosting companies. They're really the guys that can work with this. But I'm super excited because now you have not only something you can easily create a podcast with, like a front end that you connect to your host, but then all this other music stuff is built right into it. I think that's going to be so exciting
to have a native experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, my wife sent me this a couple of days ago. She's a fan of this guy, Alan Gogol. Or Gogol
rings a bell.
He's Australian guitarist. He writes beautiful music. It's Alan G. His last name is Gogoll.
Mm-hmm.
Gogol or something like that. Beautiful music. Just fantastic artist. And he posted this a few days ago. He says, "It's with a heavy heart that I can confirm Apple Music has removed and blacklisted much of my music, and continues to do so every day. This is a significant portion of my livelihood gone. CD Baby have been unable to help me at all. I'm being accused of buying fake streams for my music. There's absolutely nothing I can do to stop this. Wow. I've simply been ghosted by Apple and CD Baby and told don't buy fake streams. Wow. They're not only accusing me of this, but carrying out permanent judgment as well. I have offered my full financial records to show that I've never paid for streams, nor do I need to. And why would I continue to destroy my career like this if I was buying fake streams? In over 20 years of releasing music, this is the worst experience I've ever had, with no light at the end of the tunnel. If you're a lawyer willing to help me, please email me or DM me. Thankfully, my music is on Spotify, still unaffected, so please consider listening there." This is,
wow.
It's what happens. It's what happens when you're in that ecosystem.
And there's no one to call, no one to answer the phone.
Yeah, no, they all just say, sorry. Can't help you.
Wow.
And you potentially have lost half your income. And so, I mean, this is not just all fun and games where we're all just kind of pretending, or just not pretending, where we're all kind of just having a good time writing software. This is potentially important for real people in the real world, making real money.
Shall we,
having a plan B,
shall we help somebody out with some real money?
I would love to.
Okay. I got a banger for you. It's a Friday afternoon banger. You ready? Woo. Ready, man?
Yes.
All right. I'm ready for a banger myself. This is the Velvicks. I heard them on the Phantom Power Music Hour. I thought, yeah, this is perfect for a Friday afternoon. Sweet Cheeks, a podcasting 2.0.
I'm not a cutie from overseas, the kind of body that will make you sick. Everybody said it's complicated. Spend 7 days in my bedroom, 7 hours in my bungalow. She said, she said.
your legs are shaking, but so are mine.
Oh, yeah.
We spent 7 days in my bedroom, 7 hours in my bungalow. She's dead, oh, she's dead, oh, she's dead, yeah, yeah. She's my sweet cheeks.
Come on, get it. Come on, get it. Come on, get it.
She's my sweet cheeks.
Come on, get it.
Everybody who went to the bathroom, raise your hand.
Oh, I was seeing yellow. I had to run.
Yeah.
Velvix, that's a great name, too.
It is a good name for a band. Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast, if you didn't boost during that song, go ahead, rewind it. And you can even pause it and then just boost them. Boost those guys. Let them know. Let them know you heard it on Podcasting 2.0, the board meeting.
Yes, brought to you by the Gatesian wallet switching technology.
That's right. Yes. The magic Gatesian wallet switching technology. Yeah, that's good. That guy got me awake. I like that.
Yeah, I like it.
I feel good about
it. It helps wake you up after the NPR CEO
yes,
clips.
Indeed.
Do we want to thank some people?
Oh, you are. I mean, we can do another topic if you wanted to. I mean, I don't know. How are you on time? You got to get out.
Yeah, I got to go back to the office.
Oh, you got a hard out?
I got a hard out.
Hard out. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Let me bring up the live boost. Let me see what we have here. There you go. Eric PP, 33-33 sats for Sweet Cheeks, played on Podcasting 2.0. Perfect. That's how I love. Thank you very much. Dreb Scott, 3456. He says, hey, I thought that Hive was the solution for all problems. It is, of course, a solution. It is, of course, a solution.
Only when Brian's here.
I'm not going to deny it's a solution. It is a solution. 3333 from Gene Everett. Thank you. It just says boost. Todd Cochran, 1,000 sats. Adam, many podcasters do not know what a right click on a mouse is or scroll on welcome to my world or scroll. Yeah, welcome to my world. Yes, yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. People aren't stupid. Yeah, people like to learn. Listeners certainly do. Audiences do. Salty Crayon, 1776. Patriot Boost. Here's a little value to help balancing the Podcasting 2.0 budget since the Fed has zero motivation to balance theirs. Go podcasting.
The Fed doesn't have a budget. They just have it's just a blank. They can just write whatever they want in there. Called monetizing the debt.
That is exactly what it is. Gene Everett, Roa Ducks 2222. Happy Friday. Happy Friday to you. Todd Cochran with 5,000 sats. He says, I seriously need a clone. Go podcasting. Give you that. Well, would you look at this? 5,000 sats from pod friend Martin.
Hey, Martin.
He lives. That? He says, hello. I think I missed a show or 10. I've been so extremely busy with life, the universe, and everything. I hope everyone is doing well. Yes, we miss you, Martin. boy, do we miss you.
I would just like to talk to Martin on the phone and hear about his job and stuff.
Yeah,
like
his, yeah, and his kid and his marriage and his house and, you know, the crazy country he lives in and, you know, all that stuff. Yeah, we'd love to know. We'd love to get
crazy
an update.
Crazy but happy. Yeah, happy bunch.
I saw him pop up on the Mastodon the other day.
So I did, and I thought I was seeing, so I had to do a double take.
I'm like, someone hacked his account. This can't be Martin. Let me see. We have, is that it? Yeah, I hit the delimiter. Low boostage today. Very low boostage.
Yes, it's very low boostage. We do have some PayPals, though. We have actually two very low PayPalage as well. We have $5, a one-off from Truman Gillette. Thank you, Truman. Appreciate you. $5. Very appreciative. And Kevin Bay from the Podcasting 2.0 Endowment Fund. He says, this is monthly. It's $3.54 monthly from the Endowment Fund. I need to grow my fund.
Grow your show. Grow your fund. Exactly.
Yeah. Todd's here. He can tell you how to grow it. We got some boostage. We got Pod Home. I'm assuming that's Barry.
Yeah, that's got to be Barry.
10,000 sats through Podcast Guru. He says, thanks for listening to About Podcasting, www.aboutpodcasting.show. Great show with Sam, guys.
Yes, it was a good show. Good show.
Let's see. We got 3,045 sats from Sam Sethi, Speak of the Devil. He shows up through True Fans. He says, True Fans support from episode 176, Angel Number. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. Anonymous, boosting everyone. Let's see, boosting our song from last week. Says Groovy.
Yeah, thank you. Groovy.
Is that it? Is that, surely that's not it?
Really? That's it?
No. Okay. No. That's not right.
That can't be.
Kevin Bay, 20,000 sats through Podverse. He says somehow, some way, 1.2 million sats passed through my little V4V music podcast, Sats and Sounds, since I started.
Wow.
I'm absolutely baffled by it all, and I'll spend my portion on Activity Pub education. Well, thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that. He's a double helping of Kevin Bay today. And we got 3,045 from Sam Sethi. He gave us another boost there. No note from him. And then that's it. Yeah, we got the delimiter. 24,000 sats from Comic Strip Blogger. He's saving the day.
Yes, he is. Thank you, CSB.
Through Fountain, he says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Today, I'd like to recommend this podcast to your audience. Join Phoenix and Phone Boy for some healthy, happy, higher consciousness with some high-tech hijinks on the side. Come experience the Lotus Effect for yourselves at www.lotuseffect.show. Yo,
CSB, always on the down low. Yo, thank you. Thank you very much. We did just get, let me see, we got a boost came in. Oh, hold on a second. We got two more boosts coming in. Striper boost 7777 from Steve Wilkinson.
Oh,
CG Works. He says, we just want healthy ads. The benefits this benefits listeners and creators. I've purchased many things based on trusted podcasters. I bet. And then under the wire, 45,678 sats from Dreb Scott. He says, boost and go podcasting.
Boost!
Go podcasting!
Dreb is a repeat customer this week because he came in with our monthlies with $15 from Dreb.
Ooh, Thank you, Dreb. Appreciate you. Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
We got Sean McCune, $20. Let's see, where am I at? James Sullivan, $10. Christopher Reamer, $10. Jordan Dunville, $10. Michael Kimmerer, $5.33. Charles Current, $5. Michael Goggin, $5. And Cone Glotzbach, $5. That's our group.
What a beautiful bunch y'all are. Just a beautiful bunch. I looked at the tally coin real quick. Guess what?
Nothing. Negative.
Absolutely nothing. Zero. Absolutely nothing from the tally coin.
Did we get any runes?
Runes. You know, I always my daughter sometimes needs a little help with the rent. You know, she's a social worker these days. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll send you $500. like $20 fee.
Yikes.
That was the Bitcoin transfer. Yeah. And I'm like, this rune stuff better stop. Whatever. Kid, you better get a Lightning account. You better learn how to pay for stuff in Lightning because this is getting crazy.
Speaking of that, I've gotten in touch with Strike to see if we can get into their API.
Mm-hmm.
Just for no specific reason, really. I just want to try to understand some. I just want to get my head around a little bit of onboarding, so maybe I can just be better informed about.
Oh, sure, that's always a good
things
idea.
Around that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I want. Do we need to look at opening up maybe a FAT channel to Strike?
We can. We can open. Well, I mean, yeah.
I don't know how they control that.
That's a very good question. I'm sure that the Albie or the Breeze Boys would know. I'm sure they all fat pipe each other. Did that sound weird? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound weird.
Just slightly.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to fat pipe them.
I did get a little concerned over this recent, Samurai wallet. Now, these guys were clearly doing some, stuff. They were advertising. Like, hey, you got illegal money that you got in Bitcoin, the gray markets and black markets? We'll mix it up for you. All right, that's never a good idea.
Not a good idea.
But there's all kinds of government institutions saying, hey, you're not a money you don't have a money transmitter license. You got to be careful. So I'm just saying we got to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah, that's. I kind of want to get my head around some of that and make sure that
it's not really clear as always with all this stuff. But no, some of the writing is obvious on the wall. The main thing is if you can do it with accountability and KYC. I mean, your bank should basically be, which is what Strike really does. I mean, you do have some KYC connection when you hook up Strike to your bank.
Strike KYCs you. I mean, right. You have to give them your right. info. Yeah.
So, I think that that's just going to be a given in our future. And, the idea of anonymous money in this world is going to be very, very difficult unless everyone's on a Bitcoin standard. It's like we only buy and sell stuff in Bitcoin, which I do in many respects for lots of stuff. But it's just going to be a fact of life. I don't think we can get around it.
Well, I love Rob. And I can say this about Rob because he doesn't listen to the show. I love
he doesn't
Rob
listen
telling,
to the show. Really?
Yeah. He said he doesn't listen to the show. He said, yeah. Okay. He said occasionally
they're haters. They're
listen.
Just haters over there. Yeah.
Well, okay. He told Todd, that Bitcoin was illegal in India. This is not true.
Illegal.
Bitcoin is not illegal in India.
Illegal in India.
This is fake news.
Hmm.
It's their banks over there do heavy KYC on crypto stuff, but it's not illegal.
Hmm.
It's not any more illegal than it is in the US or the UK.
Yeah. That's right. I put Rob's most recent article in the show notes.
Oh, did you? Why?
Yeah, because I thought the title was just show notes worthy. Is adding video the future of successful podcasting strategy?
Oh, you didn't put that in the show notes.
Of course
did you,
I did. Yeah, of course.
Oh.
Because, it enhances your monetization potential. Personalization and complexity in storytelling. Video podcasts offer rich platform for storytelling. Synergy with social media trends. I'm reading it. Yes.
Can you please play the Catherine Marr clips again? Because that's more interesting than this.
I appreciate Rob. I appreciate it. But I just don't see it.
No, it ain't happening.
I just don't see it. I just don't see it. Wow. Okay. So again, this is one of those board meetings where we got in deep and I feel like we did get one step forward, maybe two steps back, but it sounds like you're going to be doing some deep dives and we're going to come up with some more stuff. And I look forward to lots of convos on the podcastindex.social. Everybody likes to weigh in. I love that. I love that. I love our little area there.
Got some more namespace stuff to do this week, and hopefully I'll have some. Hopefully I'm gonna have a better fleshed out idea about the open podcast, because I want to talk about that primarily next week.
Okay. Do we have a guest next week? Do we have a oh good. Okay. Just you and me, baby. Just the two of us. Just the two of us and the board name. Hey brother, have yourself a great weekend.
You too, man.
All right, everybody. Thank you for being here in the board meeting. We'll be back next week, Friday. See you then.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
So that we can do hard stuff.